He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
Let's talk about car financing, truck financing, because we got to get into this thing. And Jill, you sent us both an interesting article that we have talked about on this show about the banks trying to figure out how to keep business when they're basically loaning to questionable.
What was more striking was that it was the Wall Street Journal. What was even more striking is it's, I would say, 3 years late from the problem.
What I think is probably a rerun of the problem, because the rerun keeps surfacing on this problem every few years, because the financing industry runs into all sorts of problems with collecting debt and collecting payments after people get so stressed out that they stop making payments on cars. And we've been going through this for the last 40 years, and it gets low for a while, which means people are keeping up with their payments and there aren't a lot of repossessions going on, and then it starts getting bad. And now that article you sent talked about the prices of cars and vehicles are going up, which is requiring the extension of the lending terms out into 69 months average and 7 years and 8 years,
and
by which time the vehicles are worthless at the end of those times.
But more to the point, were you different 7 years ago? Were you different 7 years ago?
Yeah, I was different.
So how?
Years ago.
I mean, how can you do? This is just me.
Okay,
but
so to take a counterpoint, and I'm not disagreeing with where I think you're going with this conversation, but I can live with longer in the absolute, in the theory, with longer term loans, only because I think cars have become a lot more reliable and their life expectancy is a lot longer than it was 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. We finance houses over 30 years. People who've been buying airplanes for 50, 60 years now finance airplanes over 20-year periods. Those product life is just becoming a little bit longer. So in that sense, it is sort of okay to extend the terms of those loans.
From a
product
life standpoint.
Correct.
No
perfect.
Problem.
But
we don't
mental,
have an argument.
Mental standpoint where other. You are taking human beings and keeping them where they need something different every 4 hours, it's a little hard to fantasize how you are going to.
And therein lies the issue.
Absolutely. But this is the nature of the auto industry where struggling to keep that 17 million sales on an annual basis, and we've just dipped under that, and now auto manufacturers are just scrambling to move product, and we're back into chasing sales, and the auto manufacturers are responsible for these more lenient
terms.
Credit scores are not being looked at as closely as they were 10 years ago after we got through our last financial debacle. And but on the other, by the same token, lenders and the banks involved in car loans will say that, and I think that was in that article as well, that they don't make money on prime loans. They make money on people who are paying 6 or 7% interest.
My absolute favorite was a woman from Bank of America, the evil empire, who this was many, many, many years ago, who told me that I was a terrible customer because I didn't pay interest.
Yeah. And if you pay your credit cards every month,
that's what,
they're
I
not
mean,
making
it was,
money.
It was
the
a
irony
credit card.
Of it is that the credit card companies will give you credit cards all day long if you are a good loan risk, and then they lose money on you because you don't pay any interest. But to Jay's issue and the issue of the article and another issue, which is looming, but I don't know where it's going to go, is the tariff issue that our president is maybe imposing on imports of vehicles. Let's use the European car brand, basically. Those that are built in Europe and brought in here could be a potential cost issue for people who buy them in terms of they could go up significantly.
But what
in
about
purchase
the ones
price.
Who are built here?
Well, the cars that are built here, he's not going to put tariffs on them like he wants to do there. We pay the tariffs when they send them to Europe, but it's possible that the car pricing that you see today on cars that are actually imported, and they may include cars coming back in from Mexico. I'm not sure what's going to happen. That's out out there in Canada. But some of the pricing could go up considerably on some cars that we can now buy relatively affordably in relation to what they might be in 5 years,
but what depending I'm trying on what
the tariff, where the tariff issue
what I'm
actually
trying to,
goes.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out if a car is built here.
I don't want to go there, quite frankly, because that's not the issue. The issue is the cars coming in. We send cars to China, and we get charged 25%, I believe, on anything we go there. We were charging them 2.5% or something in that order coming back in here.
But don't
there's
they have a bigger market?
Out of kilter.
Okay,
it's not about the bigger market. It's about what the cost of the car is going to be to the consumer and whether the American market can survive a Chinese import without a 25% tariff.
A Chinese import. Okay, I'm trying to understand. Like, what are the Chinese?
Well, the Chinese car companies are getting ready to bring cars built, designed, and produced totally in China to the U.S. and to compete with the cars that are already being sold here, be it German, European, and or American built.
Have they saturated their massive market?
The labor rate in China is so ridiculously low per hour to build those cars that they can probably build an LX, a Lexus 570 series under a Chinese brand for a third of what it costs Lexus to build it and bring it in here. And then what's that going to do if the quality matches a Lexus quality? I don't know, because Americans buy on cost.
Actually, I think we're getting ahead of ourselves here, because I think that in the medium to long term future, cars will be built regionally. We see that already now. China builds a bunch of cars, including American cars or GM cars. I mean, GM builds more cars in China. I'll be careful about that, but GM sells more Buicks in China than in the U.S., and I think they are building more cars there, or they're on the verge of building more cars in China than they do here. I think that Chinese labor cost is going up. I don't think that in the long term we're going to see a massive inflow of Chinese cars.
The problem is whether they're going to compete with like-kind models that are already produced here or built here, and whether that will take away significant sales of our models. It's like Hyundai coming in. Hyundai couldn't get anywhere with their Genesis line of vehicles for a while, and still may not be getting anywhere with competing with Cadillac and Mercedes and Germany, because the perception is that they don't match the charisma, shall we use that word, of the big three German brands, Audi, BMW, and Mercedes, although they're trying mightily to do so, and you're getting a better value vehicle in the Genesis line of vehicles than you are for the equivalent price of a Mercedes, Audi, or Mercedes model. And that'll happen with the Chinese branded cars for a while too, until the quality is proven to be reliable.
When you live long enough,
I won't be living long enough.
Suddenly, Lexus and it used to be, ooh, a Lexus, and now it's ooh, a Lexus. But what I'm curious about is all of this is great for the theory room to knock things around. I'm always fascinated about. So I need a car. And what, how this translates to, so I need a car, because I think you do have a bunch of people who are, having their kids and suddenly realizing that they need a little bit of, that they can have a more productive, a financial, a more economically feasible life living outside of a city, for example. And once you make that decision, you then need some sort of vehicle to move your stuff around.
Brand wrangling. I'll switch right in, step right into brands. I read a lot about it just this morning, and the conversation we were just having is taking us there. A lot of car companies are building good product. There's no doubt about it. The technology is there. Technology that was once reserved for high-end car manufacturers is now available in every car on the market. And whether we're looking at backup cameras, we're looking at lane departure systems, cars
forward
have
collision warnings are all coming out with them, no matter whether it's a $25,000 vehicle or it's a $125,000 vehicle.
So most car companies are building fairly good product. The way they portray their cars, the way they the image they convey to the public is becoming more and more critical, and it always has been. And marketers have a huge task in bringing cars to market. And a lot of that has been done, and not always so successfully. And Jill, I think you and I talked about it a few months ago. There are brands out there that are clearly clearly define the product that they're selling, and people can relate to the product. The top brands we can think of, Jeep is one of them. Subaru is another. Those are products that are very easily identifiable. And
I would say that one is high. I would say if this was a quiz, and I'm the only civilian here, so I get to do this. I would say Jeep. I would say Jeep, Subaru. Oh, luxury Mercedes.
Audi. No, they're very easily identifiable.
Oh, okay, identifiable. Okay. Yes,
identifiable, not only visually, but as a product, as a
quality product, it's a desirable product in many people's minds.
BMW.
BMW is totally losing itself. What's the tagline of BMW?
But I know
the ultimate driving machine. It is
the ultimate driving.
It's trying to return to
the
that.
Ultimate driving machine.
But they lost their way for a while.
But of my way losers and my 30-year-olds or whatever, you know, most of them have the. I'm going to say this wrong. What is it? The X5? The
look at the demographics of BMWs now. A lot of older people. A lot of people driving sedans, comfy sedans, SUVs. It's no longer a sports car company, and this is what BMW set out to be. That was its mission when, you know, back in the 60s. You know, think of BMW 1600, 2002 is the little that evolved into the 3 Series. They were
fun, fast,
compact, fast, designed to go fast.
And to a certain degree, so was the Mini brand when they rebranded themselves back in 2002-03 when they upgraded the original Mini, which was could fit on this table, to what I owned for a long time. And now they've got a superfluous number of variants of the Mini, 4 doors, 5 doors.
Well, the Mini, bigger, the wider, Mini has lost
broader.
Its way too.
It's
I mean,
its way,
the Mini is no longer a small car. If you look at the size of a Mini,
I know
it's a huge. I mean,
and what happens? And it's sort of this has always been the
but this
smart
is forced
car.
On them by the competitiveness of the car business and people who decide that the Mini Cooper doesn't fit right in the original size, and then the Mini people say, "Well, we're our
well,
sales
we'll make you a bigger one."
I think the big mistake is for all these niche manufacturers that. The big mistake is going after volume.
And
you look at the companies that are doing well right now who are not
volume oriented.
Volvo, Mazda, great product, extremely well built.
Definitely,
it's a long term image building process, and they do not care whether they sell, you know, a million vehicles or not.
All right,
they just want to make money on what they sell.
This may be completely ignorant, but so
shoot it.
My recollection is that Volvo was always like that, and that here in the U.S. and that Mazda was always, you know, it tried to not be. Tried to be more boutique-y.
Well, the problem with the volume-limited vehicle lines is that volume means profits per car after a fashion, and that allows them to grow bigger and bigger. And Volvo's not trying to do that to their credit, I think. I agree with Jay. And I think Mazda is also, they'd love to increase their sales, but they're not doing that either. Maybe not as deliberately as Volvo apparently is going to be. Volvo is going to skip car shows next year and try to figure out how to focus on another way to get their product into our minds. And they are succeeding. They've got this new Proton. Is it the Proton? It's
like
coming out in late 2019, which is a hybrid version. And they've got something like $85,000 pre-orders for it, and 80% of those are U.S. customers who already know about it more than I do, and we talk about cars every week. but some 80% of 75 or 85,000 orders for this car are U.S. customers. So somebody, they are getting to the buying public somehow, which has escaped me because I'm not getting Volvo literature in my mail. I'm not getting Volvo stuff on my email. And yet,
but isn't it sort of like rather like a watch brand that's passed? I mean, legacy comes to mind.
Legacy comes to mind. Quality, durability,
and constancy.
And now they've added. They're adding luxury.
Ingenuity and luxury, right.
I mean, look at the Volvo XC90. It's a great vehicle. And now the new vehicles following the XC90, the V90 wagon is absolutely gorgeous and a great vehicle. The XC60s just hit the market this spring.
And the new 40 has shown up too, which is a smaller version of the 60.
The XC40 is a $40,000 plus little SUV, and it's going to sell.
And plus, as I have said on this show, I love the Volvo design. It's unlike any other out there. If they don't round it off too much and they keep their squareness, it's very distinguishable coming down the road and behind you. The taillight design at nighttime, you can tell a Volvo a half a mile away if they've got their brake lights on because of the taillight configuration. And people are buying it, but it's a square vehicle, the so-called wagon version of it. is very popular because it's square. It isn't rounded off at the sloping at the back like a lot of the SUVs are doing.
Right, but the great brainwashing, I have to jump to this for a second, is, you know, now every day you don't hear miles per gallon, miles per gallon, miles per gallon. You hear something drive. It's just in terms...
Miles per gallon starts mattering. I saw this on one of the auto news clips, and Robin, you may have seen that too. The consensus seems to be there is an analysis out there. I can't remember if it was NADA or KBB did the study. Vehicle sales and therefore, you know, mileage starts mattering when prices hit the $4 a gallon mark.
Yes.
At $3, people are not yet really concerned.
I'm offended.
Gas.
Just
at three?
At 325, at 323, 320. Yes,
are you using premium by any chance? Oh, no, 323
for regular. It's 325 in Sharon. And I will drive to Millerton for 305 for 18 cents, even though it's mathematical. I'm just saying when I start when I calculate.
There are a lot of us that are doing that, and I'm one of them too. I filled up in New Milford over the weekend. It was 303 for regular.
When I start noticing, I'm just.
I had to go down there for real estate, and I'm going down there again with another vehicle that needs gas. I'm going to fill up down there this morning.
And do some more real estate.
And showing houses.
Exactly.
I'm not driving down there to get to that gas.
I understand. I can make an excuse for driving home that way rather than whatever. So.
But here's the, you know, the mileage issue is also a big thing. I put one of my vehicles that I drove to New Milford yesterday in on 0 miles, and therefore it reset the MPG, the miles per gallon average for that trip. I got down there to show this house, and I went back roads, and my miles per gallon meter said 33.5. And this is in a vehicle that is highway rated at 28 highway and 22 city. But nobody's getting those kinds of figures on an average if they do what I see everybody doing these days, which is when they come into a parking lot, they often sit for minutes with their cars idling. And so nobody's really concerned, as Jay said. I don't think anybody's concerned at until 4 in the car buying public world. You may be, I may be at 323 because we've been spoiled having gas at under that for so long.
But we were also
It's not blunting sales.
May I just say that we are old enough to remember Katrina because that was when the first it started creeping 323 and then 4. Even though it had nothing to do.
Well, I'm old enough for you listeners who have any care about this to remember when I was buying gas at 32 cents a gallon last century when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually, I think, cheaper
and
at times.
When you were in college, we were driving across country at that.
Yeah, and then there were these little rises, you know, towards the dollar range and everything else, and I can't remember the incremental changes from then. But so it's now we're talking about $3 versus $4 being offensive as far as what we might buy.
And none of this is
pickup
in Canada
truck sales are roaring along as fast as ever, and they are gas guzzlers despite the claims to more fuel efficient engines. But
and we did touch upon this a couple of weeks ago, but in fairness, you've got to go gallon liter, because what we are sitting here saying, oh, wow, that's expensive, is to a European not
cheap.
Terrible. Yeah.
Anybody coming down from Canada finds our gas prices wonderful compared to them.
Right.
And reverse-wise, if I had a diesel vehicle still, which I don't, I liked going to Canada in the diesel vehicle because you couldn't save any money by buying gasoline over diesel if I was driving around Canada for a month. And diesel gave us such wonderful fuel mileage
and power. It still does.
Is still expensive. Well, you were complaining about diesel prices the other day about where you had to go to find where's the cheapest diesel. So even you're thinking about it.
Well, I have
in a minor sort of way.
I have a diesel vehicle with a very big tank, so it matters. So, but it also doesn't really bother me that much.
30 gallons times $4 a gallon for diesel is $120 a filling.
Yeah. You know,
well, it's not quite 30. It's not 30 gallons.
No, it's not. But I'm talking about the pickup trucks are coming with optional 35 gallon tank underneath them for people to buy F-150s and Dodge Rams and all that. And to fill those things up when they're getting 15 to 20 miles a gallon at $3.25 or whatever it is around here, that's a $100 bill right there.
Are people buying diesel and those diesels?
Well, there are not very many available right now. Dodge, I can't remember whether their diesels have been rated to be sold in 2019 yet or not. There's a whole problem going out there with certification of current engines, gasoline and diesel, in our country as well as Europe. And I'm not sure how the diesel engine availability is going to sort itself out over the next 24 months.
I give up because I don't understand. We've been bashing diesels. I say we. Diesels have been on targeted for the last couple of years now, and yet certain manufacturers keep promising diesels arriving on this market, and some have delivered and others not, and it's like hit or miss. Why does Chevy come out with a four-cylinder diesel that they have in a Chevy Cruze, which nobody buys in the first place? So there's even fewer people buying diesels, and it's a great car. It's a great engine. And it's out there lost. But it's part of GM's problem, I think, and we get back to marketing and
branding. It's part of this mini car problem, which is afflicting all the manufacturers, too. The Cruze is a small car, although it has grown a little bit. And people aren't buying small cars either, so the manufacturers are stopping their production because there's no profit in them. It costs as much to build a Cruze as it does to build a Chevy Impala, almost.
But do you trust the manufacturer who has made the Mini, taking their wonderful Mini market and started adding, making the size so that you don't have what you had and you've got a different car that's supposedly good? Like, do you trust their judgment in when it comes to this sort of
choice? No, I think they've wasted an awful lot of money trying to build a compact car because they thought that the compact car was the way the American buyer was going to go if gas prices went up. And exactly the opposite has probably happened.
Mini will survive. Fiat is dead.
Well, he's talking about brands. I'm talking about size of car. Mini cars will survive in a very small. I know you were. Jay didn't. Jay was lost on Jay, I think, down there.
Okay,
but he's right. Fiat is probably.
Mini is still a smaller
Fiat
car.
Fiat is on a survival watch right now, as far as a brand in the U.S. is concerned.
In the U.S., who owns Fiat?
There's nothing to watch. It's dead.
Fiat Chrysler.
Fiat Chrysler, okay. By the way, FCA. The name.
That's what FCA is
right,
about. Okay.
It's now called JARM, Jeep, Alfa Romeo, Maserati, and Ram. And that's it. Fiat Chrysler really does not exist because
JARM in his head.
The Fiat brand is dead, and the Chrysler brand is dying.
Well, on that morbid note, he is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.